Welcome to Only Murders in My Mind, a Random Thought production. Hi, I'm Carol Bissett, a crime writer, and I invite you with my co-presenters, Liz Hedgecock and Mike Jackson, each week to our conversations on all things murderous. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Only Murders in My Mind with my guest presenters, Liz.
Hello.
And Mike.
Hello.
And we've got a celebration. Happy birthday to us. Happy birthday. We're 21. Now, you may wonder.
I wish.
Yeah, 21 again. Now, you may wonder why that's a something to celebrate. And I'm going to hand over to Mike because he's the one that pointed it out to us.
I found some interesting statistics about podcasts. And apparently, as many as 90% don't get past 3 episodes. And of the 10% that left, only about 1% get past 21 episodes. So that means that puts us in the 1% club.
Yeah.
I don't know what happens when we get to 50 episodes. Yeah. Probably have a big party, but
yes, we will.
We're persevering and we're keeping going.
Yes. And we will carry on as long as people want to listen and we are enjoying it. And we do. I hope that comes over. We do get sidetracked now and again, but that's all part of the fun, isn't it?
What, sidetracked? Never.
What would be nice too, that if you are enjoying it, if you were to subscribe, if you are listening to us on YouTube, or leave us a comment, that would be great. And we'd love to know what you think so that we can change it around to suit you or add things to suit you.
More of something, let us know.
Let us know.
Yeah, because it's fine, 3 friends in a room talking about something they're interested in, that they love, that they do for a living, etc. But it's about what our listeners want to hear as well. So, I mean, we look at stats and we know which ones you really like and which ones you're not so keen on. So we do take that on board, but actual comments would be good. The other thing I want to mention is the Stockton Heath Festival, which is a local, if you're listening in Australia, we don't expect you to come, obviously. But the Stockton Heath Festival is running from the 4th of July through to the Sunday, which is the 7th. Yeah. And there's lots and lots of things going on. But we are in the library, myself and Liz. Mike's on holiday again. I'm not saying anything, you know. Liz and I will be talking about the way we write our murder mysteries, and that's from 11:15 to 12:15 on the 6th of July in Stockton Heath Library. So big shout out for the people that organise the festival put so much work into it, and it's usually well organised, isn't it?
It is, yes.
You know, I've been to some festivals where it's been a bit haphazard, but you know, people are walking around all the time telling you what's on, telling you where to go. There's a tannoy in the field which keeps telling you what's on in different places. So yeah, I'm very impressed. Yeah. And as I say,
yeah, and there's a read around, isn't there?
There is.
Yep. So from 10 to 11 in the library, there'll be lots of different authors, hopefully, reading from their work. So if you fancy sitting down, kicking back, listening in,
come along. Yeah.
Or if you've written something recently you want to share, it's another good place to go to. Can I also mention, in terms of the Stockton Heath Festival, that Carol and Liz are both exhibiting some of their paintings. St Thomas's Church. I've got a full art exhibition going on. And I think that's running for the whole time, isn't it? Thursday through to.
And I'm not at all apprehensive.
No.
I got myself into?
But if you want to go and have a look at Liz's artwork and Carol's artwork, you can do. And if you want to buy it, please feel free.
Oh, yeah, please do.
Yeah, we're open to offers. But thank you, Mike. But there will be lots of lovely artwork being displayed. So lots of things for everybody. So what are we talking about today? So we're talking about sidekick, the person who is slightly in the shadows when it comes to our detectives, and they very often, you know, sort of get the worst of the person's temper, etc. And there's a lot of them. Before we go on to detective sidekicks, I'll do my research, and there was some that came up that I thought, yeah, well, Robin, Batman and Robin. Well, that's obvious, isn't
it?
Oh, yes. Yeah, yeah. Chewbacca?
Yeah, okay.
Star Wars?
Han Solo, yeah. Chewbacca, yeah.
Ron Weasley and Hermione? Mm-hmm. Definitely. Yes. Donkey from Shrek.
donkey.
Would you say he was a sidekick?
Well, yes, he's not trying to steal the whole movie. No.
Yeah. Like donkey.
And sidekicks are often annoying.
Yes, and he is slightly annoying, isn't he? Slightly annoying. And I'm a very big Buffy fan. So Willow out of Buffy.
Oh, yes.
And Gromit out of Wallace and Gromit. Do you know, I'd put that the other way around.
Yeah, I think sometimes, you know, Gromit is the action hero and Wallace is merely along for the ride. So,
but yeah, seriously, we're going to talk about the sidekicks that we all know and love. And the book, the television, the film, whatever, the audio, they would not be the same without these sidekicks that the brilliant detective uses.
So what's the function of a sidekick, do we think?
Make the detective look good.
Yeah, there is that. Yeah.
I think it always strikes me as a bit like a comedy job. If you take Morecambe and Wise, you know, you always felt as though Wise was the one who got slapped around. He was foil for Morecambe.
Yeah, yeah. You had Eric Morecambe being anarchic.
Yes. And I feel the same when you think of Hastings.
Yes.
With Poirot. I mean, Hastings isn't the brightest button in the tin, is he?
No.
And it's almost a foil for to make Poirot look even better, in a way.
Yes. But he's reliable and he's steadfast.
Yes.
And he always tells the truth. But yes, every now and again, Poirot gets frustrated that he has to actually explain something. Yeah. To him, which is
very, very handy, of course, because if we, the reader, need something explaining, then it's quite handy to think, "Hey, heavens, Hastings is there, so I don't look stupid asking this."
Yeah. Well, John Watson in Sherlock Holmes, exactly the same. You know, he's always saying, "Well, how did you know that that man lived in, you know, Belfast
in a drain
and
under
had
the
just killed his wife?" You know, and
what happens?
Sort of questions we might be asking, Watson asks for them and allows the writer then to give us some clues as to what's happening.
So in that respect, it's a really good way of getting information to us as the plot develops.
Yes.
Which, do you know, I've never really thought about it, but it is, isn't it?
It's also, I think, they seem to be the characters they are, so that they are never the main character. They're always that. They've got an important role, but they're always that secondary character. So it makes you wonder if that's why it makes them a bit dull or a bit dopey.
I think they're just solid, dependable people, and they will always be there for you in a crisis, or they'll always be ready to hold your coat while you go off and do something foolhardy.
I
think it was Conan Doyle who said something like, you know, a good sidekick or second in command should be of slightly below average intelligence. So, yes. And then, of course, if we've got the, you know, if we've got the clue, we can feel superior because we got it and they didn't.
Yes, we knew about it before they'd realised.
Yeah. Yes. But like you, Carol, I went through looking at various sidekicks that we either see on television or in books or in both.
Ooh.
And I've got John Backus here, who works alongside DCI George Gently.
Yes, he's one of my, I've got him down as well. Yeah.
Ah. Now, he's Bolshy, isn't he?
Oh, yes.
And again, it's that sort of almost different to George Gently, but it's almost as though George Gently has to calm him down. But every now and again, John Backus is probably saying the sort of things that we might say.
Yeah. I look at that relationship more like a father and son relationship.
Yes.
And he's a stroppy, I know he's not a teenager, but he's like the stroppy teenager who is impatient to get things done. Whereas George Gently, I've worked with this actor, by the way. Not name dropping, but yes. I was a supporting actor in one of his films. Anyway, yeah, he sort of wants things to happen yesterday and wants to cut corners where George is like, no, we're not going to do it like that way, you know, we're going to do it like this. Yeah. So, yeah, it's a really good point, that.
Well, Lewis is another one in Morse.
Yeah.
You know, Lewis sort of almost wants to hurry Morse along or to go down a different way or be a bit more modern than. Morse won't be sidekick, but they become, as you say, it's that almost that father son relationship as well.
Yeah. But then Lewis goes off on his own series and has Hathaway, as his sergeant. Yeah.
So how does that relationship work then? Is it a contrast to the Morse Lewis relationship?
I think so, because in that Hathaway is a highly intelligent. I'm not saying Lewis isn't. Lewis is a good copper, and he's learnt it from grassroots. Hathaway was going down the route of becoming a priest, and he dropped out, but he's very, very intelligent and sees things again in a different way. I love that series. I love the connection that they had.
It's almost a role reversal, isn't it? Because Hathaway, in a way, is clever and into the classics and, you know, knows his Latin, etc., in the same way that Morse did. Mm-hmm. So it's as though they've turned them on the head.
Very Do you think clever. It would appeal to the same viewers? I mean, if you've watched both series, what did you think?
I have watched both series, and I prefer, maybe it's because it's more recent, but I preferred the Lewis series to the Morse series. Right.
Now, I prefer the Morse ones, whether that's because they were the original, and I see Lewis as a spin-off. I don't know, but I enjoyed the Lewis ones as well. Yeah. I think what I enjoyed, even though they're both set in Oxford, they don't try and do the same things.
No.
I think quite often some spin-offs work, and that one I think does.
But there was the young Lewis, the young Morse as well.
Yes,
remember that?
That? Endeavour.
Endeavour.
Yes, because that was his Christian name, wasn't it? Endeavour.
Poor chap.
I know.
And in that play, in that way, he was the sidekick to Chap Who Smoked the Pipe.
Yes. Thursday.
Inspector Thursday.
Yeah. Because he was trying to protect him, wasn't he? When they were
father figure.
Yeah.
Approach again.
Yeah.
That's a really interesting idea, isn't it, though, that you can be a main character in something and a sidekick in something else. I mean, just thinking about it, I'm sure I remember reading somewhere that, you know, really good villains quite often think that they're the hero. They're the hero of their own story.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How do you think sidekicks feel? Do they know that they're sidekicks? I think Dr. Watson definitely knows that he's a sidekick.
Yeah.
What about other ones?
I think some of the ones that we've just been talking about, like John Backus and Lewis, probably see themselves as sidekicks learning the job. And it's a bit like when I was a head teacher, I always expected my deputies to be thinking, right, I'm training on the job, but soon I'll be able to do his job better than him. And I think that's what comes across with Backus and with Lewis. They think, I could be a chief inspector and I could probably do a better job than him.
Mm.
Though in fact, what they do is they probably do a similar job because they learn so much.
Yeah.
But there is that almost as though they're learning on the job from somebody senior, somebody who's better at it.
I'm trying to think of a crime series where the sidekick has actually been obviously trying to get the senior detective's job.
Yeah.
I can't, I'm sure there are some, but I can't, you know, maybe even trying to make the senior officer look a little bit stupid or something like that. But I can't think of it. It'd be a good story, that one.
Yeah, definitely.
I think they're less likely to fit into how we're describing a sidekick, though, because in all the ones we've seen so far, it's the main character and the sidekick who are working closely together.
And also the sidekick's meant to be loyal.
Yes.
So, yes, that is.
Because I have a similar situation in one of the book that I've just written where someone who is really in a sidekick role is trying to undermine, you know, their superior officer.
Yeah.
Which is an unusual.
Who's rumbled them. Mm. So, yeah. Fun times in the next book.
Mm. Oh, yes.
But we haven't talked about any lady sidekicks, female sidekicks yet.
Indeed.
There are plenty around.
Go on then, name some.
Let me see. Della Street. Now, here's one that came back, brought back all sorts of memory from when I was very young. And as I'm very old, being very young was a long time ago. Della Street was Perry Mason's secretary and assistant in the Perry Mason shows. Did you ever see the Perry Mason shows?
No.
Perry Mason was a lawyer in a wheelchair.
Yes.
Okay.
But he had a male sidekick whose name I can't remember, who sort of did the donkey work, did out and did the investigations when he was doing a case. And Della Street was supposed to be the secretary, but she was also his sidekick as such.
Oh, I've actually got two, but it's the same detective. Favourites of mine and Mike's Monk. So you've got Sharona, and then Natalie took over from her.
Oh, I haven't got to that bit. Don't spoil
no,
it
okay,
for
I won't
me.
Spoil it for you. but they're both atypical sidekicks to a very clever but dysfunctional man.
You've also got Barbara Habers, who's in the Thomas Linley
series. Yes, okay.
And also Camille Bordy, who is in the Death in Paradise.
Sergeant. Okay. Yeah. Right.
And there's Siobhan in the Rebus books.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Siobhan she comes in originally as a sergeant to work with Rebus, and then in the later books,
she rises up the ranks.
Yes, he's retired, but she's still got a soft spot for him and helps him. Yeah, so, now you've mentioned it, they are starting to pop into my head.
Yeah. So do they fit the mould of the traditional psychic, or is it a slightly different relationship?
Siobhan in Rebus does, because there's very much she has a different set of views and standards, these stuff, but she's always tried to keep him on the straight and narrow. And I think he sees her almost in that father-daughter relationship. Mm-hmm. But the other ones, like Barbara Havers and Camille from Death in Paradise, I'm not... They're certainly...
They're good detectives,
In their own right. They're not a foil as such for the main ones. They almost seem to be in partnership.
Yes, rather than a sidekick,
But I think it still comes back to the same idea that when you watch those programmes, that junior sidekick is the one that the main character will be bouncing ideas off. You know, I wonder if so-and-so might... I wonder if the alibi really stands up. Mm. It's almost as though they're being used to answer the questions that we as a reader might ask.
Yeah, so that they're talking to someone rather than talking to themselves or wondering aloud.
That's right.
Instead of doing the big reveal at the end.
Yeah.
Well, it's dropping those sometimes red herring, but sometimes clues along the way to help us.
I mean, in Death in Paradise, they do a reveal at the end, don't they? Because it's always a bit of a locked door mystery. It's always something that can't possibly have happened. So it's always the main detective in that Death in Paradise who then... You can see the penny dropping, can't you?
Yeah.
So I'm just trying to think of any other female sidekicks.
I'm reading a book 6 at the moment of the Washington Poe series.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And his sidekick is Tilly Bradshaw, Matilda Bradshaw, who is extremely clever. She's a genius, but also autistic. She just says things as they are. So they're completely different characters. In fact, I don't think she's even a policeman or policewoman as such, but she's much more into the looking at statistics and data.
Yeah.
And he's taken her under his wing, but she comes out with some comments and things that are really, really funny. I'm not sure they're meant to be, but they are.
Yes.
But it's a real foil against him because he's very brusque, likes to bend the rules and so on.
Yeah.
Whereas she's one, because of her, the way she is, she'll say, but Poe, you can't do that. It says in the police manual, page 23, section 47, that you're not allowed to do that, because she knows everything.
Yeah.
She's got this brain. And he'll say, look, Tilly, we're just going to do it. And it's a great contrast.
Is he a British detective?
Yes.
He's not an American detective?
No, it's all based in the Lake District.
All right. So I really must... read. I have heard of him, obviously.
I keep meaning, so there's so many things that you think I must read.
A chap called M.W. Craven.
I saw him being interviewed once. It was a YouTube interview.
But I
did think then I probably would like his books.
Book 6 is literally just been released.
But if I do, I'll start with book 1. I won't do what I usually do and start halfway through.
The good thing with book 1 is you get introduced to him. You know, his gruffness and whatever. And then you get introduced to Matilda, Tilly. Mm-hmm. And you think to yourself, there's no way that these two are going to have any connection at all because there's just nothing in common.
So does she work for the police as a...
More as a data analysis.
Yes. Because in my Warrington Detective books, when Price, the main character, has got a twin brother, Aaron, who is autistic, but he's very agoraphobic and he won't go out. But every now and again, he points what he considers to be the bleeding obvious out to her because he can see what she can't. Because, again, he's got that sort of mind, you know.
One of the things I like about your series as well, The Warrington Detective, very good series, you should buy it. I've not been paid for that endorsement.
Book four due any day.
Yeah. It is, yes. Is that because it's a kind of an ensemble cast, then someone can be, Cassie can be a sidekick to Wen, but then she's also, can be a protagonist with a psychic of her own. And I like that kind of the changing relationships and seeing how people relate to each other.
Yeah.
I think the nice, going back to this Washington Post series, is as you go into each book, you see these two characters
develop.
Mm. Individually, but also you see them come together. I'm partway through book six, and Washington Poe says something along the lines of, well, Tilly, I can't remember what I said. And he said, of course, he didn't want to remember. He'd actually been rude about somebody. Mm-hmm. And she said, well, actually, Poe, what you said was, that man is a F-word idiot who F-word shouldn't be trusted. And you just verbatim and tell him exactly what he said. And he'll say, Tilly, not the right moment to remind me.
Fee and the two characters in your
booth. Oh, Fee and Jade.
Fee and Jade. Their relationship, as the books have progressed, have developed, and the people around them, their family and everything. And I love that because, as I say, I'm invested in them now. I don't want anything to happen to them. Anything nasty. Lots of things happen to them, but nothing nasty.
Yeah.
So,
but yeah, I think sometimes, I like to think they have an equal relationship, but sometimes because of circumstances, one of them has to play second fiddle because they can't go and investigate that thing because they're implicated in it. So the other one has to take the lead.
Yeah, so, I think the...
Which frustrates the heck out of them.
The sidekick, the balance goes up and down, doesn't it, depending on what's going on. Yeah, that's true.
It's difficult, isn't it, to actually think of any books, TV series, films that we like, that we enjoy, where there isn't a sidekick.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking of Stryker, which is... J.K. Rowling.
Strike, Cormoran Strike.
Yeah, yeah. He's got that, that young lady,
who
I can't remember her name, but a psychic. So I'm trying to think, do we know of any sort of detectives or anything who work purely alone, don't have any sidekicks at all? And I can't think of any.
I was going to say...
Robin is his sidekick.
Robin, that's the one, yes.
Yeah. I was going to say in the May Gray books, he's quite often a bit of a lone wolf.
Yes,
he'll get
he is.
Some support, but...
But there's no obvious sidekick, is there?
No.
No.
And those feel different, which is something we can discuss in another episode. Yes. I don't want to go off on May Gray.
Yeah, yeah.
I think you're right, Liz, because I think in something like May Gray, he is a loner. He's not going to work with anybody else. That's his whole makeup is, I can do this on my own.
Even if you really can't at times.
Yeah.
I can't think. Because there has to be somebody lower down the ranks for it to be made, to be interesting, I think. There has to be somebody else, that... seems a bit. I mean, in Monk, there's the captain, and then
captain.
he's got the
that dopey sergeant.
Oh yeah, but I like him.
isn't that one of the joys of a sidekick?
Yeah,
we like Captain Hastings because he really is dopey.
Yeah,
and I think that's part of that. The important character is there to be admired. The dopey sidekick is there to be liked.
Yeah. But I mean, going back to...
also, quite often, you get to see the human side of the protagonist.
Yes, true.
How they relate. So when Holmes is, worried about Watson, makes him all rounded.
I was just going to say that. But Watson, obviously, is clever because he's a doctor. He's got a medical degree. Mm-hmm. But it was things like, I don't know whether it was Watson that said it, but when he finds out that Holmes didn't know that... the earth went round the sun and the moon went round the earth because he didn't need to know that.
No, he didn't know.
And doesn't he say, now I do know it, so I'm going to do my best to forget it.
Yes.
What's
the point? I don't need to know that in my mind palace.
Indeed.
Yeah. But then again, that sort of works on the level of their brains are thinking in different ways.
Yes.
Watson is a very down-to-earth person. He knows things that help to make the world as it is.
Yes. He's got all the basics.
Yeah. Holmes knows things that nobody else knows nor needs to know.
Or possibly even want to know.
Or even want to know.
Yeah. So it's an interesting balance, and the characters of the main characters are much richer for the fact that they've got these people that they can insult. Yeah. If they want to.
The strange thing, though, isn't it? Just, I'm still thinking about this idea, are there any main characters that we know without sidekicks? And apart from May Gray, possibly, I can't think of any more. Mm. But when you get down to villains, villains don't usually have a sidekick. They tend to work on their own, or do they?
Yeah. I mean, if you think of Wallace and Gromit, there's Feathers McGraw, who is very much a lone operator.
Moriarty.
Yes. They have minions,
they
don't
have
they?
Yes. Underlings.
They have people.
They don't have
do
anyone
things.
Close to
no.
them.
No, they don't have anybody they confide in. They're very much master spy. Who was it? What was that in? Was that Thunderbirds or?
you've got Batman and Robin.
Yeah.
But then you've got the Joker.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Well, a lot of the Batman and Robin villains are. They're on their own, aren't they? Yeah. I mean, a lot of the super villains. I suppose you could say some of the superheroes work on their own. Superman. Mm. You can't tell anybody who he is, can he?
maybe that's a book that needs writing, you know, the villain with a sidekick.
Could be.
Yeah, a proper, somebody that, is trusted sort of thing, yeah. Because, again, if a villain does have somebody tagging behind you, they usually get a lot of abuse off the villain, don't they?
Yeah.
You know, you are stupid sort of
thing. It tends to be an employment thing, doesn't it? So they'll have a hench person.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, it's the same in Harry Potter. The chap whose name we don't mention had lots of underlings and henchmen.
They were all terrified of him.
Terrified of him, and he would dispose of them at his will if they became inconvenient or unnecessary.
But also they were there because it's like there's something in it for them.
Yes.
Yeah. It wasn't an affectionate relationship at all. You know, I don't think there was proper loyalty, or there was loyalty on the condition that. So, it's a different kind of relationship, isn't it?
And I think, Liz, you've got something on this theme in one of your books that is relevant, isn't it? Sort of for a sidekick.
Reasonably, yeah. I was thinking about this the other night, as you do, and I was thinking about a bit from my Pippa Parker series. And basically, she's trying to sort of recruit somebody. The basic scenario is that some letters from a 19th century female poet seem to have gone missing, and Pippa wants to approach an academic who's a bit of an expert on this poet to try and find out more. And it's kind of them sort of sounding each other out, really. So I'll read a bit. The door to the main corridor opened and Pippa saw an assortment of students. They shambled off, eyeing Pippa as they went without interest. They were dressed in a variety of styles, but all looked absurdly young. That means I'm getting old, thought Pippa. Behind them was a face and head of hair that Pippa recognised. Hello, said Bryony Shepherd. You must be Pippa. That's right, said Pippa, and you must be Bryony. Yep. Bryony unlocked the door. Come in. Coffee? Yes, please. Pippa followed Bryony into the room, which was small and cramped. Much of the space was taken up by bookshelves. In the corner was a small desk with a computer piled with papers. Above it was a board covered with flyers and notices. Take a seat, said Bryony, removing a pile of paper from the only other chair. She leaned down and flicked on a kettle which was tucked away in a corner. Tell me about this event. It's all a bit up in the air at the moment, said Pippa. You see, Jeremy Lightfoot held a meeting about it in the village just the other week. Jeremy Lightfoot, eh? Said Bryony. She looked as if she could smell rotten eggs. Then why do you want to talk to me? I'm sure he's got more than enough celebrity chums who can come and lend a hand. If it does come off, said Pippa, I'll probably be organising it, and it'd be nice to have different people. Oh, and I'm different people, said Bryony. She seemed half annoyed, half amused. I don't mean that in a bad way, said Pippa. I meant less establishment. Bryony frowned. So what made you come hunting for me? Well, I found you on Twitter, said Pippa, feeling as if Bryony could see straight through her. And as you're local. You mentioned Much Gadding, said Bryony. I take it you live there. Have you met my Auntie Marge? Pippa wondered whether Bryony would switch on her desk lamp and shine it in her face. Yes, I know Marge pretty well, but I didn't know about you until Daphne mentioned you. Oh, yes, Daphne. Bryony laughed, not a nice laugh. The guardian of the letters. Have managed to get a peep at them? I've seen one or two, said Pippa. Typical, said Bryony. And I bet that twit Lightfoot has wangled himself open access. No, he hasn't. The kettle pinged and Pippa breathed a sigh of relief as Bryony's attention switched from her to coffee making. She looked at Bryony's profile, the prominent nose and chin, the firm mouth. Without the red hair and the studenty clothes, Pippa suspected she would resemble Marge in 40 years. She's angry, thought Pippa, and she shoots from the hip. And as Bryony was putting her mug of coffee on a nearby bookshelf, Pippa took her courage in both hands. You see, the letters have gone missing. Coffee slopped onto the coaster. Excuse me? Bryony hunted for a cloth. Finding none, she pulled a tissue from a box on the windowsill. They vanished after a meeting at Daphne's house, said Pippa. Daphne doesn't want it to become a police matter, so I'm investigating. Bryony goggled at her. But how come? Marge doesn't know, said Pippa. Nobody knows at the moment apart from Daphne, me and my husband, who isn't interested in the slightest. Bryony puffed out a sigh. Then she laughed. Well, if I can't have them, they may as well disappear, she said. Who do you think's stolen them? There's more than one suspect, Pippa said carefully. Bryony shot Pippa a look, then began to count on her fingers. Lightfoot, obviously. Except that he's the one who asked me to persuade Daphne to share the letters, said Pippa. He could have kept his mouth shut and got to work on them in peace and quiet. I suppose, said Bryony, ungraciously. All right, who else? Who is a friend of Daphne's, said Pippa, keeping her voice steady, with a niece who could use a lucky break. Bryony gasped. Auntie Marge would never. No, I don't think she would either, said Pippa. But I don't know. So you want me to clear my auntie by helping you work out who done it, said Bryony. That's a very manipulative approach. I actually came here to ask you what you knew about the poems and letters, said Pippa. I didn't intend to take this line, it just sort of happened. So emotional blackmail just sort of happens. And as you can see, they're getting on famously.
They're going to work well together.
Oh, yeah, they're going to be great,
mates.
Sounds
like they're out of suits.
Yes, I was just thinking about their interactions. Yes. And, you know.
Yeah, they're like sounding boards off each other, yeah. Aren't they? That type of thing.
But you can see them working together.
Yeah.
Because they've got something in common that they want to work on.
They've got very different motivations.
Different
processes. Now, Mike, you have been asking people to send in short stories, and we've had some success. I mean, we've read one out from Kerry, and now we've got one that you're very keen to read out. So over to you, and you can say what's a happening.
Thank you very much. Well, if anybody hasn't done Only Murders in My Mind as well as the podcast, we've also got a blog. And one of the things that happens on the blog post is that every Friday I put a picture prompt up and encourage people to write a story. And recently a chap called Kevin wrote in the comments to say, never tried short story writing, but the podcast and the blog were inspiring him. So he's written a few short stories.
Excellent.
And I thought I'd read one out for you. I did get his permission first. I've always loved coming to the park just to sit and watch the world go by. I bring my notepad so I can plan out the coming week. I've done this since my husband passed away, just 18 months after we got married, but that was over 40 years ago now. I like to plan. I hate surprises and like to feel that I'm a mistress of my own destiny. I'm the same at work. Everything is mapped out to the smallest detail. Shift rotors, stock deliveries, and all manner of arrangements to make my week as stress-free as possible. The last few years have been difficult. First, there was the COVID pandemic, which disrupted the best laid plans of a care home administrator. And then there were the tightening of the regulations, which called for a whole lot more planning and organisation. I'm a creature of habit, you see. And after the insurance money for my husband's unexpected death ran out, I needed another way to fund mine. It was so easy to get the old dears to put a small bequeath in their wills to thank me for all the hard work and care they'd received, and then I'd slip something into their complan, something completely untraceable, to ease them on their way to the visit at St. Peter. The only thing I'm not planning on is getting caught.
Well done, Kerry.
Thank you, Kevin.
I'm a bit worried about the influence that you're having on people.
And the other thing, if you do
fantastic,
if you go and have a look at the podcast, I've started something called Tiny Tales. So I'm putting some of these stories, and Kevin's is one, into a little video, so you can see those videos on the
YouTube.
Podcast. They're on YouTube, but the link to them is on our podcast.
Yes, excellent.
Called Tiny Tales. So if anybody out there wants to write a short story, then let us know, and we can either read it out or make it into a video.
With your permission, of course.
Yes. We wouldn't presume, because you'd written to us, that we could automatically use it. So.
And we won't charge you anything either.
But you'll be famous.
That's big of you.
Oh, right. I think that wraps up this episode.
I think so.
Yeah, I think
are
it
we
does.
Your sidekicks, Carol?
Yep.
Oh, okay.
Which one of us is the dumb one?
I don't think you should ask that.
only when it comes to the podcast. No, we're all equal partners in this. Couldn't do it without you guys. Wouldn't be fun, would it? Oh. Right, so until next week, next Thursday at 5 p.m, we'll close this episode now, and thank you all for listening. You have been listening to Only Murders in My Mind, a Random Thought production, produced by John Bissett. The music in Peril was composed and recorded by OM Studio Strings.